Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. President Theodore Roosevelt once said, "To educate a man in mind and not in morals is to educate a menace to society." Now, you may agree with that sentiment about the importance of morality, but we may be making academic success even more important, and the kids feel the pressure.
So consider this scene from the ABC series Modern Family. The mom, Claire, gathers the family around to celebrate the birthday of daughter Alex. But Alex is preparing for her SATs, and she doesn't have time for cake.
Hey, we all know why we're here.
Alex, sweetie.
I really need to focus. There is a 16-year-old science prodigy studying cancer research at Johns Hopkins. 16! What am I doing? I'm eating cake!
No.
So the pressure to succeed is real, but where is it coming from? Well, a new study from the Harvard Graduate School of Education suggests that parents, yes, even cake-baking, happy birthday singing ones, may be piling on the pressure. 80% of kids surveyed in the study think that their parents emphasize achievement over happiness or compassion. Richard Weisbord is the lead author of this study. It's entitled The Children We Mean to Raise, The Real Messages Adults Are Sending About Values. He's the co-director of Harvard's Making Caring Common Project, which conducted the study. Rick Weisbord, how many kids do you have?
Three.
Three kids. How old?
24, 22, and 19.
And you had to think a little bit there. I bet you
realize they're all changing ages.
Yes, they keep doing that. You are making a lot of parents out there, you know, even more crazed and confused than they already are.
You know, we have a fairly simple message here. You know, I'm a parent too, and I've been bombarded with all the parenting tips as well, so I understand what the craziness is. But in a way, the simple message is that we're out of balance, and if we focus more on our kids really being able to tune in and take responsibility for other people, they're going to be more ethical, but they're also going to be happier, and they're probably going to be more successful as well.
And we want you to unpack that through this discussion, and yeah. We want our listeners to call in as well with your own experiences. Does it surprise you that most children who were surveyed in the study believe that parents value achievement above everything else? And if you happen to be a parent, how do you balance the values that you try to instill in your child? Maybe you are a student. If so, what was the message that you got or are still getting from your parents? And how about teachers out there? What do you think parents and teachers can or maybe should do to try and shift the priorities? Give us a call. The number is 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And, of course, we're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So let's break down the findings, Richard, first. You spoke to 10,000 middle and high school students from 33 schools. What did you want to know from them?
Well, we asked them many things, but we asked them one straightforward question. We asked what's most, in a sense it's straightforward, what's most important to you? Being a happy person defined as feeling good most of the time, achieving at a high level, or being a person who cares about others. And that's really what the findings are that you're reporting, because about 80% of students said that identified as their first choice either achievement or happiness. Only about 20% of kids identified caring as their top choice.
Yeah, go ahead.
We also asked them to imagine how their parents would rank those things for them. And we asked the question slightly differently, how do your teachers would rank those things for you? In terms of how they imagined their parents would rank those things, it mirrored their own beliefs. So they thought, about 80% of kids thought that their parents placed a higher priority on their either their achievement or their happiness than on their caring.
And you asked them to weigh in on hard work versus fairness. What did you find there?
Yeah, and you know, and just to be very clear, achievement and happiness are clearly very important, and they're not inconsistent. You can achieve at a high level and be happy and be a very caring person. You can work hard and be very fair. But I was surprised in the data that kids were more likely, far more likely, about three times more likely to rank working hard as more important than fairness. And, you know, we have a cheating problem in this country. Over half of kids are cheating during the year, every year. I mean, we have pretty good data about this. So, you know, it's concerning the degree to which kids have demoted fairness and in relation to these other values.
Okay, so why does one have to necessarily be demoted? I mean, can't kids hold in their heads the ideas that you want to achieve the greatest success that you're capable of, that you want to be happy and make others around you happy, and that you want to act compassionately with morals?
Yeah, so this is what I mean about these not being inconsistent. I think they're totally consistent. You can do all of these things. But what I think is happening is that the power and frequency of our messages about success and achievement tend to drown out or sideline our messages about concern
for other
people. Not by necessity, but I think by the ways in which parents are tending to parent these days. And it starts early. You know, it's when parents let kids dominate conversations with other kids or adults, take up too much airtime. It's when parents don't require their kids to reach out to a friendless kid in the playground. It starts later, you know, or it happens later when parents let their kids fudge about their community service and college applications. It's these quiet messages that we're sending day to day that I think are throwing us off balance and leading to this higher emphasis on achievement and happiness and this lower emphasis on concern for other people.
All right. I want to get a few examples from some listeners who are calling in right now. In fact, we'll go to those calls in just a minute or two. Let me ask you, though, true confessions time. What's the most recent mistake you made with one of your kids?
You know, one of the things that we're trying to say in this report and that I feel very strongly about is it's not those parents. You know, I think we have a way of talking about this, like there are those achievement-crazed parents out there, or there are those parents who don't. You know, parents tend to blame other parents in our data. Teachers tend to blame parents, or sometimes teachers blame other teachers for this. But it's all of us. You know, it's me too. You know, when my kids were young, I often, you know, didn't require them to write thank you notes, or I let them write off a friend that they found annoying. You know, recently, or not too long ago, my daughter was thinking about, she's involved in the dance group, and she was thinking about quitting. And I said to my wife, let her quit. She's not having any fun anymore. And my wife said to me, you know, excuse me, Mr. Moral Development, we can't just let her quit. She has a responsibility to this dance group. And, you know, this came up in our data too, that, you know, parents often aren't telling their kids they have a responsibility to their teams or their dance groups or their classrooms or their neighborhoods. Do they have these responsibilities to things that are larger than themselves? And I find that I fall into that as well. So again, you know, I think this is in the water. I don't think it is that those parents out there. I think it's all of us, and to some extent, we all have to be more vigilant about this.
That's a tough one, though, isn't it? Because you want the child to be compassionate and to have in mind the interests of the team. By the same token, if the child is unhappy, isn't it just as justifiable to say you should opt out because maybe you're not giving your best to the team?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think the solution in this case is to say to the kid, you have to stay on the team. I think it is to say to the kid, you have to consider whether you need to stay on the team.
And it's not all about you.
It's not all about you. And maybe you should quit the team in the end. But at least you have to consider that your coach, other players, you know, have invested a lot of time, that you are part of a team. So it should just be a factor in a way that I sometimes think it's not a factor.
Okay, let's take a few phone calls now. First, we have a call from Rentham, Massachusetts. Bob is calling. Bob?
Yeah, hey, how are you? So my daughter just graduated from King Philip High School, and she, you know, she's a bright overachiever and all that other fun stuff. Her class motto was ruthless.
Ruthless.
Now, I graduated ruthless. And I graduated in 75, and I remember when kids gave their valedictorian and salutatorian speeches, they talked all about changing the world. The valedictorian and salutatorian KP talked about themselves and their inside jokes and what they were going to do to become successful people. I was shocked, to be quite honest with you. But I see it. I saw it as my daughter and her friends grew up, that they really were pushed by their parents. And I mean, I pushed my child too, but they were pushed by their parents, and they really took very little responsibility for making the world a better place for other people.
Okay, Bob, thank you for that thought, and hold on to that thought, Richard, because I want to take another call first before we get your opinion on that one. This is from Susan from Sharon.
Good afternoon. Hi. I am a school teacher, a middle school teacher, as well as a parent of a student in high school. And what I have seen as an educator for 33 years and as a parent is the reality that we're living in a global economy, the reality that more and more kids are infiltrating our schools who come from cultures where children go to school for 11 months out of the year. For children with whom, say, 5 hours of homework would be the norm. And from families from families where kids go to school in July and on Saturdays. And in America, we have to compete. The reality is, it's a reality. We have to compete against these kids that are here, but also these kids that go to school sort of 11 months a year and study for 5 hours, and the expectations are so much higher. And so, you know, as much as we want to say to our kids, okay, you know, be a good person, be happy, reach for your dreams, the reality is that it's really hard to get ahead in America and elsewhere, but it's more competitive than ever.
Okay, Susan, that's really important. And maybe we can put those two. Thank you very much, Susan, for that call. And Bob, thank you as well. Richard Weisbord, we can put those two things together because you can feel the stress even in Susan's voice there as a parent who wants your child to succeed in an extremely competitive environment. And it kind of makes you want to adopt as your own class motto, ruthless, as Bob was saying that his kid's class motto was.
So, you know, I appreciate both the comments. I mean, in terms of the first comment, I am worried about the same thing. I am worried about that there are some kids out there who are really about winning. And this comes up in our data that, you know, some kids will say things like, you know, I really want to make a lot of money. I want to succeed. If I have some excess energy, I will spend it on other people. It's a minority. It's a fairly small fraction. But there are definitely those kids out there. I also just wanted to say in relation to the first comment that there are still a lot of kids who are doing valedictorian speeches about caring for other people. And this also comes out in our data. There are a lot of very ethically oriented, ethically committed kids out there who are doing terrific things all over the world and very community engaged and very ethically minded. So that's an important thing to point out as well. I will say, you know, about the notion of our living in a more competitive society, which I think is true, is that, you know, we're not arguing, again, that achievement isn't important. We are arguing that achievement and concern for others are not incompatible. And in fact, one of the things you see in immigrant families, which I think the second caller was referring to, in many immigrant families is both a high emphasis on achievement and a high emphasis on concern for others. I mean, in immigrant families, there is a lot of emphasis often on pitching in, helping out your parents, helping out family members, helping out community members. And it's not incompatible with achievement.
Well, how did you find that out? Was there diversity represented in your
There is diversity in our sample, but this is also find this out because we've, you know, I've done and our team has done, you know, 10 years of interviews of different folks. And there is data that shows that when immigrant kids first get here, they are doing better on almost all the emotional and ethical measures that we have. They are less likely to be delinquent, less likely to abuse drug, more likely to do well in school. The longer they're here, the worse they do. So by the third generation, they tend to be doing as bad or worse than their non-immigrant American counterparts.
What happened?
Well, this is a puzzle with many pieces, but I think one of the pieces, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but one of the pieces is they become Americanized and they become very focused on a very individualized American culture, and that can create fractures with their parents, too, or who are much more collectively oriented.
Sure, but America is a land of immigrants. I mean, at what point did the message stop? And what is the message that you might hear in some of those new immigrant families that then dissipates through the generations?
Well, I think the message about collectivism and pitching in and this not being about just yourself, but being about things larger than you is a message that is in Latino families, Hispanic families especially, is strong, and Asian families is very strong. I don't know the history of immigration, but we do have different immigrant groups that are immigrating now than we used to, so that may partly explain.
And before we go to calls, and I'm going to give the phone number one more time, it's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Just very briefly, it strikes me that in terms of pressure to achieve, that pressure may be applied differently depending on, say, one's socioeconomic status, one's gender even. You would think there might be families where nobody has gone to college, so it would be a major score if somebody went to a two-year school.
Yeah.
In other families, it would be a major. I mean, your level of achievement that's expected would be graduating with high honors from some Ivy League school. Did you account for that?
Yeah, and you know, this is a I'm very glad you mentioned this. This is a super important point, and we say it very clearly in the report. Achievement, all these values mean different things in different communities. So we did a lot, you know, we've done a lot of interviewing and focus groups with kids to understand what they mean by these values. And, you know, in some communities, achievement is about concern for others. It's about just enabling your family to survive. It's about pitching in to your community. It's about honoring your parents. So, you know, it's very important to know what the meaning of achievement is. In other communities, achievement is about getting into an Ivy League school, and kids feel very ashamed if they don't get into an Ivy League school.
Did you distinguish between those in your findings?
Well, we certainly do distinguish it in the way we report our findings. Yeah. In the findings themselves, it's hard to, in a survey, it's hard to distinguish those things. In the interview, it's much easier to distinguish those things.
Okay, let's go to the telephone once again. Manal is calling now from Sharon. Manal, you're a college student?
I am. I currently attend Tufts University. So I just wanted to talk about the whole college application process and how I think that students bring a lot of the stress upon ourselves through interaction with our peers. I went to a very competitive public high school, and since ninth grade, I had friends, including myself, who did internships at like prestigious schools in Boston or areas, and it was always a competition and who could have like the most club activities or who could excel and get the highest SAT score, because it was a lot of kids wanted to go to the Ivy Leagues, and the Common App itself has like 10 slots for activities, and if you didn't fill that up, it was a scary thought, because it automatically made you feel like your application wasn't going to get you far enough in the process. And then after going to Tufts, which is a really great school, I've seen friends who are changing their majors from art history to computer science because they can't make money. So it's all about success. It's from students, it's from media, because if you what I've seen is that you read so many articles about even if you go on like websites such as yahoo.com, they have like lists of majors that won't get you jobs, or list of activities that will, or anything. So it's like computer science, and then it's telling you to switch from political science to biology so you can get a job. So that's my basic thing. I think it's more so students and then kids themselves who are just feeding off one of each other.
Thank you very much, Manal. What's your reaction to
well,
that?
Well, a couple of things. Again, I really appreciate this comment. I think there's a contagious aspect about this for kids and for parents, and you know, and for some schools too, for independent schools. You know, it's as a parent, if your neighbor's kid is getting if your neighbor is getting their kid an SAT tutor in the ninth grade, you feel like you're cheating your kid if you don't get an SAT tutor in the ninth grade. If you're a student and you feel like this, you know, there's a community service Olympics going on in some community to see who can have the most high-profile community service experience. And, you know, where that Olympics is going on, you know, we've had kids say to us, you know, I can't just volunteer in a soup kitchen. I have to cure AIDS in Africa if I'm going to get into college. I'm not saying that perception is correct, but I think that is the kind of competition, as this caller points out, that is getting generated. I will just want to say one other thing about this, which I think this caller has also pointed to an important leverage point, which is the college admissions process. Yes. And we are beginning to have conversations with college admissions officers about ways in which they can change some of these messages and signals, and particularly ways that may be harder to game.
So the word would be what instead of what? What's being said now?
Well, you know, community service gets to be an individual competition often. So, you know, what if you're inspiring kids to do things collectively, for example, to do collective action? And service is often about privileged kids doing service for less privileged kids rather than doing for. What if the message was doing with rather than doing for? So these are just some of the things we're kind of thinking about, and thinking about whether there's some different messaging that we could do around this that might be more productive.
And do you believe, I mean, you're someone who's at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, do you believe that college admissions officers truly consider community service a valuable indicator of an applicant's talents?
You know, I don't have a lot of contact with college admissions officers, but I certainly do have some. And in my experience, college admissions officers go into their business because they really care about whole people, and they really care about admitting people who, and you know, they're under enormous amount of pressure, and I don't want to be naive about that. They're under enormous amount of pressure from universities and financial pressures and et cetera. But a lot of them really do care about admitting kids who appear to be kids who have, you know, strong ethical commitments and want to create a better world.
Okay. A few more phone calls. Just a couple of minutes left. If you can keep your comments short, that would be terrific. Alicia calling from Sherbourne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Great discussion. And I just want to say amen, particularly to the comments you made on the ability of immigrant families to embrace both achievement and caring and compassion for their extended families, and also the important distinction the distinction you gave about achievement. I'm a mom of a boy who we adopted from an Eastern European country about 4 years ago. So he came in at the sixth grade level in a very competitive public school system. We were told, and he's gotten tremendous support, ESL support, and the school has been very supportive in that respect, but the school is tremendously competitive. We were told they don't really know how to deal with a child whose parents don't necessarily want him to get into an Ivy League school. And that's the situation he finds himself in now. And, you know, I've only been a mom for 4 years now. And the difference in the focus on achievement, and particularly what it takes to get there and what parents are willing to do and urge their kids to do, has just been, frankly, appalling to me.
Okay. So, Alicia, thank you. Thank you very much for that sentiment. We want to take one more phone call from Colleen calling from Jamaica Plain.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead with your call.
Hi. Thanks. Well, what I was saying is on a broader level, it seems as if our brains have, like, gotten into a groove. And we're just all thinking the same thing, even though, so when we encourage individuality, we're encouraging, like, the same kind of individuality rather than true individuality, which comes from the heart and the ability to calm down and do that cooperation, you know, like, and as far as the immigrant thing goes, it's as if the ruthlessness comes from America's ruthlessness. You know, when the immigrants are still connected to their roots, they're connected to a community which has the generational connection still intact.
Got it. Thank you very much, Colleen. We appreciate your phone call. And for all those others who have called as well, I'm sorry we can't get to your calls, but thank you for reaching out. Richard, just a final thought or two from you about what you just heard and perhaps the rootlessness of American kids, and a suggestion, if you will, for those parents who are out there really wanting to do the best thing they can for their kids. I mean, give them the words to what they would say, for instance, tonight. Maybe what they would normally say to a child that you might say, you know, give it a little bit of a twist, rejigger it, try doing it this way.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we didn't really get to, I mean, just in terms of the American rootlessness question, you know, we're a complex country and a very varied country. So there are many kids who are rooted and there are many kids who are not rooted. In terms of your last question, you know, I think a simple thing that parents can do is that we have a problem where, you know, parents will say, if you ask them, the most important thing is that I raise a good and caring kid. But that's not what kids are hearing. So there's a rhetoric reality gap. So a simple thing a parent can do is just engage their child in a conversation. What do you think is most important to me? Is it that you're successful and achieve a lot? Is it that you're caring? And begin that conversation. Instead of reflexively saying to your kid, the most important thing to me is that you're happy, you might also say the most important thing is that you're kind and act with integrity and that you're happy. I mean, a couple simple messages like that are at least seem like a starting point to me.
Great. Thank you. Richard Weisbord, co-director of the Making Caring Common Project at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. He is the lead author of the study we've been talking about, The Children We Mean to Raise, The Real Messages Adults Are Sending About Values. Richard, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, writer Stona Fitch on his new Boston crime novel, Third Rail. I'm Lisa Mullins with Anthony Brooks, and this is Radio Boston.